Welcome to the jungle. We start hour number three. Program brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. It is so good to have you here. Third hour sets up sort of like this. I've got Josh Bell, a first baseman for the Pittsburgh Pirates, coming up in 15 minutes. My thoughts on Game 7 of the Sharks and Vegas. I can't believe we made it all the way to Hour 3 without talking about that game on any other day. That would have led the show, and I still haven't gotten to it. I want to reset a couple of stories from yesterday. Ezekiel Elliott and that bunny that laid that beat down on that dirtbag in the street. If something seems too good to be true, generally it is. That rabbit is not the hero we thought he was. No way, that guy's got a criminal background? Yeah, obviously. That was not the first time he let his hands go. Clearly. So all of that's coming up. 1-800-636-8686. Blazers fans have dominated the phones today, and I would encourage you to keep calling. It's one of the best nights ever. Let's talk some hockey, though. If it wasn't for Dame Dalla and that dagger he sunk from the Washington side of the Columbia River, I would have opened up the show riffing on Game 7 in San Jose. I would have started with that absolutely insane comeback in the Shark Tank last night. I mean, for nearly 50 minutes, it looked like the same old story. For 50 minutes, it seemed like the same old Sharks. 27 seasons, 21 playoff appearances, no Stanley Cups, and a whole lot of misery. No team in the NHL gets less with more. No team in hockey gets more invites to the dance with nothing to show but a solo Uber ride home, and that's it. And for 50 minutes last night, it looked like another classic shark job. Vegas was rolling. Marc-Andre Fleury was dominant. Vegas 3, San Jose nothing, blood in the water. Thanks for freaking coming. And then this happened.
It's just a war zone down in front of Fleury. Down goes one of the Sharks and staying down. Is that Pavelski?
Oh, my. That's Pavelski. He's bleeding.
And the referees are talking right now. This is one of those things. This could be a five-minute major. Here, they got him.
The Sharks captain being attended to by head athletic trainer Ray Tufts.
They got Eakin. Here we go. It's going to be maybe four.
For now, it's four as Eakin's sent to the box. Debris starts to come out of the crowd as Cody Eakin sits for now, but he might get a major penalty and could be out of this game.
Pavelski taking the draw right there. He creeps cross-check, and then a double whammy as his head hits off the ice.
So that was sort of one of those bang-bang plays off a face-off and a really scary situation for Joe Pavelski. Now, I don't want to rush by that point, and we'll get to the call in a minute, but first and foremost, you never, ever want to see an injury like that to anybody. Nobody wants to see that. That's a really, really respected guy on the ice. Really tough guy. The captain, Joe Pavelski. He scored a goal with his face earlier in the series, and we're in Game 7, and he's out there playing. Here's how Joe Thornton described the injury after the game. Quote, "It almost made you cry. We love him so much. You never want to see a teammate get hurt like that. So you hold him as hard as you can, get him off the ice, and get him better." End quote. Here's what Thornton said in the moment when the Sharks were down 3 goals with just 10 minutes left in the season, according to Logan Couture. Quote, "You got to give credit to Jumbo. As soon as we got to the bench, he said, you guys go out and get effing 3 goals right now. When a man who's played 20 years orders you around like that, bosses you around, you've got to do what you got to do. So we got 4, end quote. So if you want to know how the Sharks would rally after their captain was carried off the ice, bleeding on the ice, you found out 6 seconds into that power play.
Here is a major opportunity now for the Sharks. They've got a 5-minute major power play. They're down 3-0, but they can keep scoring goals on the power play. They need to do it quickly. LeBanc, cross ice, Couture, shot, score!
All right, then, again, that was a 5-minute major, and we'll get to the call in a minute. But I just want to say, they did have a major opportunity. That's one. 49 seconds later, they scored again.
Behind the back pass to Erik Karlsson. He stops it. He shoots it. Tip score! That's Tomas Hertl tipping the shot by Erik Karlsson. Another power play goal in the third.
All right, just like that, a 3-goal lead. It seemed hopeless. A three-goal lead suddenly is down to one, just like that. And then the game was tied.
Behind the back, pass to Burns, cross-ice play. Here's Couture, winds up, shoots. He scores! An incredible comeback for Sharks hockey, and Logan Couture is mobbed by his teammates. He skated all the way to the Sharks bench to celebrate with everybody. The Sharks have tied Game 7, 3-3.
But again, they were down 3-0 in Game 7 in their own house. And then the penalty, and then that's two for Logan Couture, and that's a tied freaking hockey game in Game 7. An unbelievable power play. And again, on that penalty, you can score as many times as you can. And that was three. And then suddenly, it was four.
LeBanc will field it on the right point and stop it. He moves into the circle. LeBanc tees up, shoots, score! Kevin LeBanc has just put the Sharks in front in Game 7 with 6:39 to play with a brilliant shot from the right wing side. This crowd is going crazy.
Total implosion. I mean, the wheels have come off this thing altogether. Vegas had a 3-0 lead. In the third, Game 7, it was all right there. It's amazing. I mean, if that game ends like that, that's one of the best Game 7s ever, except Vegas was not laying down. Not dead, can't quit. Not dead, can't quit, and the Golden Knights are a team made of freaking steel. Their turn to clutch the hell up. And with less than a minute to go and an empty net behind them, Jonathan Marchessault did this.
50 seconds to go. Right corner, it's Stone. Behind for Smith. Shot! Score! Knights tie it! 47 seconds to go! The feed from the back of the net found Jonathan Marchessault in front. 4-4 tie!
So I tweeted it last night. I'll say it again right here. The only thing better than Game 7 hockey, more Game 7 hockey. In overtime, with the Shark Tank in a freaking frenzy. 18 minutes and 19 seconds in, for once, the Sharks don't shark.
Puck came out, but Erik Karlsson intercepts. Moves across the line, lead. Barkley Goodrow gets around the defense, shoots. He scores! Barkley Goodrow is the hero for the Sharks in overtime in Game 7. The Sharks were down by 3 goals. They came back, they took the lead, and then after Vegas tied it, Barkley Goodrow is the big man on campus. Sharks win 5-4, and they win the series in 7.
Extra, extra. Read all about it. You know what? That was only Goodrow's second shift of overtime. But he made it count. A legendary move on a legendary goalie to score a legendary goal to end a legendary game. Let's go back to the penalty on Cody Eakin. Vegas head coach Gerard Gallant was diplomatic post-game. When asked about the explanation, he got for the five-minute major. Jonathan Marchessault was not. In fact, this was a rant for the ages. This is what Marchessault had to say.
I mean, I really hope that Joe Pavelski is okay. Obviously, you never want to see something bad like that happen, but it's a joke. Call 5 minutes for that? That's, why don't you have a hockey replay or something? Change the whole hot comment of the game. Like, seriously, what is that? It's so disappointing. It's like trying to get involved in the game. The game's not even close. It's 3-0. Call the two, okay, but a five with something you don't even see? You just call the outcome. It's a joke. It's embarrassing. What
did they tell you on the ice as a team?
Oh, he says it looks pretty bad. Ferla told me it looks pretty bad. Wait, if it looks pretty bad, you clearly do not see it. It's a face-off. It's a push. When probably 50% of the face-off players, when they lose, they give a small cross-check, right? If you want to call the cross-check, call it. It's fine. Like, it's a cross-check. But seriously, like, he falls bad. It's unfortunate. He's like, I'm a big fan of Joe Pavelski. Don't get him wrong. He's an awesome player. And he went down, and I really hope he's okay and he's going to come back. But that call, like, changes the whole outcome, changes the whole future of us, of the outcome this year, and it's a joke. I mean, I would be embarrassed if I was them.
It's the second time in the series that they've seemingly guessed a call.
Yeah, they guess. So exactly, why don't you have a video replay? Like, just help them. It's a fast game for everybody out there. It's a fast game. It's embarrassing.
Well, that's some kind of response. I mean, that is a rant for the ages. So the NHL's serious supervisor gave this comment on the hit post-game from the league. Quote, the referees called a cross-checking penalty for an infraction that caused a significant injury. In their judgment, the infraction and its result merited a major penalty. End quote. So if you think that's going to make anybody in Vegas feel better about that, good luck with that. about the only thing that would have made that explanation saltier to Vegas is if Jumbo Joe hit up Instagram and shopped himself into a photo with the ref, like Todd Gurley did after the NFC Championship game. Listen, when you have an amazing game like that, an amazing game, the last thing you want to do is talk about the referees. When you have a legendary Game 7 comeback, you want to talk about the action on the ice, not whether or not the guys in the stripes mangled the game. But this time, there really is no way around it. There's no way to get around it. So, was that a cross-check to the face? It was not. It was not. Was that the right call on the ice? A five-minute major? Debatable. Did the ref react to the hit or to the blood that was on the ice? That's the question, right? Was it a result of the hit or was it a result of the ice? The hit itself would in no way merit a five-minute major. It was more of a push than a hit. I mean, if it's a push, is it even a penalty? But again, they would say, all right, fine. They would say 2 minutes is fine. Cross-check. But are you penalizing the hit or are you penalizing the result? Are you penalizing the cross-check or are you penalizing the blood? I can see why Vegas was so frustrated. But then again, last I checked, it was not the guys in the stripes scoring 4 goals in 4 minutes on one of the best goalies on the planet. It was the Sharks. And last I checked, Vegas still had enough in the tank to peel themselves off the ice and get that game to overtime, which was absolutely brass, but they couldn't finish. This one's tough. I'm not saying the refs cost Vegas that game. I am saying that if they don't make that call in that instant, Vegas probably wins. And if they don't make that call, frankly, I don't have an issue with it. Because again, are you penalizing the hit or are you penalizing the blood? Are you penalizing the hit or are you penalizing the result? I guess what I'm saying is this. I hate the fact that we're talking about the refs at all at the end of Game 7 that went to OT in the postseason. Brutal penalty. Brutal penalty kill. Let's be very clear about that. And now it's over. I don't want to say the refs cost the team a game. I never want to say that. But if that call is not made, Vegas probably wins that game. And if Vegas doesn't implode, they definitely win that game. It sucks, right? The whole thing sucks. JM summed it all up.
Summer starts 5 months now until game one of the regular season starts. It's awful.
It is. It is. Except for the Sharks, who somehow, someway did not shark. And then, in fact, they did the opposite of sharking. And now that they're still standing, might they be the team to beat? Dear Rome, I'm not going to lie. I went to a dark place when the Knights tied it up with 47 seconds to go. A classic Sharks playoff move. Build me up, just rip my heart out. For everything that every diehard Shark fan has endured over the years, man, can you imagine if they came all the way back, took that lead, and lost a Game 7 at home? It would have been the most Shark-like thing ever. Rome, Vegas did not lose to San Jose because of a bad call. They lost because they stood around on the penalty kill, warming their thumbs and not helping their goalie, and watching angry Sharks whistling 4 goals past them in 3 minutes. That's fair, too. That's fair, too. But if there's not a five-minute major called, then we're not having this conversation. However, you're right. I said it myself. The guys in the stripes didn't pump in 4 goals in 4 minutes. Where'd he come out? Josh Bell joins me when we come back. Speaking of hockey, don't forget, Eddie Olczyk is this week's guest on Ep 78 of the Jim Rome podcast. It's live right now. We talk hockey, we talk ponies, we talk life. It is a great, great podcast. Look for that. Speaking of ponies, what does America's Best Racing and the Jungle have in common? Both subscribe to one rule. Have a take, don't suck, or you'll get run. Today's email sponsor is americasbestracing.net. In racing, it's all about picking winners. Do not be left feeling like Jake in Buffalo or Rich in the 636 after the pigeon drops their calls.
Everyone has the will to win. Let americasbestracing.net prepare you to win. Have a take, don't suck, and visit americasbestracing.net. And most of all, do not have your call dropped by the pigeon. Got that, Rich? Got that, Jake? Pigeon bringing the hammer. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Hitting it all today. Damian Lillard knocking down that 40-footer to knock OKC out. We just talked Game 7 between Vegas and San Jose. Let's talk some baseball. We're joined right now by a first baseman for the Pittsburgh Pirates. He's hitting .284, 4 home runs, 16 runs batted in. He was the 61st pick overall in 2011. The Pirates, just one game out of first in the NL Central. They are hosting Arizona this evening, 7:05 p.m. Eastern. First baseman Josh Bell is my guest. Josh, great to have you on. How are you?
Can't complain. How are you, Jim?
Good, man. Good. Great to have you. It's a long season. I know you dropped a tough one to Arizona last night, 2-1. When you have a game like that, Josh, how eager are you to get back to work, get that taste out of your mouth?
Oh, yeah. That's the beautiful part about this game. You know, last couple of games have been kind of rough, but, you know, get to wake up, rinse it off, you know, get an opportunity to get the win tonight.
We're talking to Josh Bell. So one of the things you've said, Josh, about this season is, quote, I'm living on the barrel. It's a great line. What do you mean by that?
You know, I feel like in this game, especially me as a corner infield guy, if I put, you know, two or three swings off the sweet spot a night, you know, I'm going to get, you know, a couple RBIs. I'm going to, you know, do what I need for the squad to get the W. So just trying to stay on the sweet spot, you know, for the most part, not alter my swing to get the ball in play. And if, you know, if I can, you know, hit a ball over 100 miles per hour, I'm probably hitting 600, 700. So just trying to stay right there.
We're talking to Josh Bell. I'm going to talk to you about your swing in a minute, but it seems like part of what that means when you talk about living on the barrel is you're going to rake with runners in scoring position. So how much pride is there in the way things are going right now in the sense that everybody knows that if they get on in front of you, there's a real good chance you're going to bring them in?
No, it's great. You know, it's fun baseball, especially with our pitching staff. Yeah, we got five guys that, you know, can keep guys below three, four runs a night. So if we're scoring more than three, four runs, we have an opportunity to win every night. So for me, being a cleanup guy, just trying to come out every night. There's a runner on third with less than two outs. You know, I'm doing my best to get the ball in the air, get the ball in the outfield, get a sac fly or maybe a little bit more than that. So that's my game plan.
Pirates first baseman Josh Bell joining us. Now, you had a kind of a challenging season last year, and when that happens, there's a couple of different ways you can go, right? You can get frustrated and quit, or you can go to work. And in early September, I know you had a conversation with Clint Hurdle. What was that conversation like, and what was your takeaway from it?
Well, Clint basically sat me down and said, look, I believe in you. We want you to be our cleanup guy for years, but you kind of have to look yourself in the mirror and realize what the team needs of you and be prepared to bring that to the ballpark every night. You know, I was a guy that wasn't living on the barrel. I was a guy that was altering my swing to make contact in certain situations where, you know, swings and misses are okay in this game. It's being able to do damage. So, he asked that of me, and, you know, I got to work this off season to try to really perfect that. You know, decent start so far. Rough skid the last probably 10 or so games, but really excited, like I said, to have another opportunity tonight to come out and help the boys get a W.
That's such a great line, Josh. I can't wait to tell that to my son. I've got a 14-year-old son who said something. His hitting coach hit him with the exact same thing. Swings and misses are okay. It's having to do damage, which is the big thing. I love that. I can't wait to run that back to my kid. Now, Clint.
Oh, yeah. Clint, oh, yeah. You got to get your A swing off in this game. You look at guys that, you know, do damage. You look at the Aaron Judges. You look at the J.D. Martinez. They're going to strike out over 100 times. I mean, they're – you can't fight that. You can't, you know, alter your swing as a power guy just trying to put the ball in play because, you know, me at 245, I'm not going to beat out a ground ball. The guys are too good at this level. So I'm just trying to do my best to get four balls off the barrel. And if I do that, I'm much more likely to get a hit than, you know, choking up and putting a ball in play.
That's not what you're paid to do, my man. Josh Bell joining us. That is so good. So at one point, you came out here to California, and you worked out. But as you told The Athletic, I went out to California to further the idea that my voice is the most important thing. Again, I find that really interesting. What did you mean by that, and how'd you go about doing that?
Well, I feel like, you know, one of my things, I'm like a cerebral guy. I love hearing different concepts from different people. You know, one of those guys that has no problem reading different articles of what things are working for different guys across the league. And I got to a point to where my dad would say I was being too coachable. I was listening a little bit too much and listening to the voices that weren't the most important one, which is my own. So for me to go out to California and live on my own pretty much for the first time in my life and, you know, work out the way I needed to. And I got introduced to a new hitting coach and Joe DeMarco works with me and like Austin Hedges. And he was Matt Chapman's guy growing up. So, you know, new guy, new philosophy. And, you know, for the most part, I kind of ran my work day. He introduced things. And if I didn't like it, I had no problem saying that that's not for me. Wasn't like, you know, he was a part of an organization that was, you know, paying my bills. So I have to say yes in certain situations. It was nice to kind of just unplug and get my swing off and work on myself and show up to spring training ready to go with a clear focus instead of a clouded mind.
Josh Bell, first baseman for the Pirates, joining us. Josh, you did a video with the team where you talked about the fact that baseball is a game of failure, but you can use that failure to look in the mirror and say, who do you want to be? It's a pretty profound statement, actually, not just about baseball, but about life. Like, so where did that approach come from?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where you're going to fail. I mean, you've heard it 1,000 times. If you fail 7 out of 10 times, you're going to the Hall of Fame. It's how you deal with a failure. It's, you know, it's being able to rinse off bad games, bad stretches, and bouncing back with a clear mind instead of letting that doubt seep in. Because this game's so fast, any doubt, any anxiety, I feel like any game, you know, NFL, NBA, you know, golf, if you let any sense of doubt seep into your spirit, and you're not going to play at your highest level, and you're not going to play for a very long time. So, you know, it's about being able to bounce back after bad stretches and realizing that you're here for a reason. You know, we're all in the big leagues because we're the best from our high school, we're the best from, you know, our college classes, and we're playing against the best, so we're going to get out. But in regards to getting my swing off and doing what I do, you know, I love the opportunity to have success, just like, you know, any pitcher loves the opportunity to get me out as well.
Josh Bell joining us. So I mentioned my son, which brings me to you and your dad, Ernest. You and your father, Ernest, spent hours working on your game. And people might think, and you know how this is, right? Like sometimes when you're working with your old man, and if your old man's really hard, really tough, it's not always the best time ever. But you've always said, man, it was great. I got to hang out with Pops. It was always in good spirits. What were those sessions like? And how much did you just like playing ball and hanging out with your dad?
Oh, yeah. There's a pretty, I think it's a thick line between, you know, overcoaching and being that dad that's yelling at your kid from the stands, you know, to get your back elbow up or come on, son. Like, you know, we've all been on teams where there's that one parent that cares, but cares in the wrong way. And my dad was always the one that, and you know, he would push me up into that point. You know, he would let me, I had the pitching machine in the backyard and those wiffle balls, so I could pretty much smoke balls wherever I wanted. If they bounced off the house like a window, nothing would shatter, nothing would break. So he would let me have my home run derby, and then he'd move the pitching machine up closer and challenge me. He'd move the pitching machine up even closer. And it got to a point to where I would go 3-for-10 instead of going 10-for-10, and I embraced that challenge. He'd be like, bases loaded, bottom of the ninth. You know, I'm fifth, sixth grade preparing. He's like, oh, you know, Saturday night game and, you know, the ballpark in Arlington. You know, it's one of those things that kind of gives me chills knowing that I'm going back next week. And that was a stadium that my dad, you know, kind of implemented in my mind. You know, you're facing the Yankees right now. You know, it's Rivero trying to get you out. You know, what are you going to do? Two strikes, what are you going to do? It's a situation where I look across the clubhouse and I see, you know, players with their sons, you know, running around, you know, playing catch, you know, having BP after our batting practice. And, you know, it's definitely special knowing that my dad's watching every at-bat. You know, he's a guy that I can call after a good game. I can call after a bad game. And it's always the same message. Like, you got this. You're here for a reason. We've already trained. We've taken thousands more swings than anybody else. Like, it's just a matter of time. And it's cool to have him in my corner.
Talking to Josh Bell, I want to add one more layer to that. You go back to 2017. Your father and his father went on the annual dad's road trip to Atlanta, saw you have an RBI double. What did it mean to you to have that moment with your dad and your grandfather there?
That was awesome. My grandfather hasn't seen me play since high school. And I was facing R.A. Dickey, and I'm not lying. I hit that double off the label. It was one of the nastiest knuckleballs I've ever seen. It was like right down the middle, but it moved. It seemed like 6 inches the last, 3 feet in front of the plate. And I just dumped it into left field, and, just being able to hear their voices from the stands, it still gives me chills to think about. And it's just a testament to, fathers in the community. I feel like baseball is a father-son relationship. And, I still got pictures from my grandfather teaching me how to play catch. My dad played football, but my grandfather was a baseball guy. So he taught me to play catch in my backyard and kind of skipped a generation there, but my dad kept it going. And it's awesome to know that I've got his support as well.
Just wrapping baseball with Josh Bell for a couple of more moments. Before I let you go, Josh, I got to ask you, crushed a home run on Sunday wearing the throwback unis, which was an amazing look, and there's some incredible history behind that. How much do you like the throwbacks?
We take a lot of negative backlash. Everyone says that they don't look that good. I think they're awesome.
I like them.
Just remembering the history. We got, Dave Parker shout out. We have the if you hear any noise, it's me and the boys bopping shirts. And just knowing the history, knowing what kind of atmosphere to play at that level at that time was, and to bring home world championships at that time, it must have been an amazing experience. So just to pay our regards, pay our respects, and to win in those jerseys on Sundays, it's pretty special.
Josh, I'm old enough, man. Dave Parker was electric. And this guy was unbelievable. He was amazing. Listen, last thought. Pittsburgh is a great, great sports town. What's it like to play there and represent that city?
Unreal. I grew up in Dallas, and you got the Mavericks downtown, you got the Stars downtown, and then, the Rangers and the Cowboys are, 35, 40 minutes away, so... Being here in Pittsburgh, knowing that all three stadiums are a couple miles apart, knowing that we're all the same colors, people bleed black and gold here in Pittsburgh, and if you don't, you're probably getting trash talked to you on the streets, in the stadiums. Just to have that support, going to Penguins games and listening to that place light up, following the Penguins the last few years, definitely special. And, just knowing that, a couple blocks away from our stadium, you can go to Jerome Bettis's restaurant. And when I first signed, that was the first restaurant that I went to, and they took me into his owner's suite, and there's Lazy Boys brought out, and there's six flat screen TVs in there. And it's just for him and his special friends. And for me, my first experience in Pittsburgh is, sitting down and, a Hall of Famer's Lazy Boy. This is the spot where I want to be, and sort of the spot where I want to be for years to come.
Sounds amazing. First baseman for the Pittsburgh Pirates, 61st pick overall in 2011. Pirates only a game out of first in the Central. They're at home against Arizona. Josh, my man, you crushed that. That was so fun. Really good to have you on the show. We got to be sure and do that again soon.
Awesome. Sounds good. Hopefully more to come. Cross your fingers for us.
You know it. You got it, Josh. Thanks very much. Appreciate you. That was so good. That was such a good conversation. Josh Bell, Pirates first baseman. Anybody in the Berg listening? God, that guy represented you so well. Really, really good conversation. All right, when we come back, one last segment. And what I want to do, the Cobra, Dave freaking Parker, just swinging out his cleats, the big man. When we come back, I want to try and reset a couple of the stories from yesterday that need updating. One involving Ezekiel Elliott. One involving that Easter Bunny that we thought was a hero. The hero we all needed turned out to be the criminal we did. Don't have time to wax your car? New 303 touchless sealant will save you hours. It takes just minutes to apply. You simply spray on and then you rinse off. It protects up to 2 times longer than traditional waxes. More protection and shine, less effort and time. It is available at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Got the ATP coming up momentarily. All right, so rare is the day when I need to double back to not one but two different stories from the day before and provide some pertinent updates. But today is one of those days, and since we're down to our last segment, let me take care of this business. Yesterday, after the show, news broke on two different topics, which we covered extensively in the jungle yesterday. And you're probably going to want to hear both these developments. Let me start first with Ezekiel Elliott, who was, and I took up for him yesterday. Well, I gave him some grief about getting a tattoo of his face on his own leg. But I took up for him, for all of you who were rushing in to call him fat. He was unjustly getting fat shamed over the weekend for a picture that he had posted with an unflattering, ill-fitting, baggy shirt. You'll remember that I came right out and I had this guy's back. I said he was a slab of granite. And I told all you morons to knock it off with the Eats a Lot Belly It glosses. But you didn't listen. You never do. You marched right on in, cracking your lame jokes about how he's going to jump into a giant red bucket of chili, eat his way out for a new TD celebration this season. Well, I hope you've had your fun, because now the party is over. And if you don't believe me, check his Twitter feed. Dude had clearly heard the noise about him allegedly blowing up. So what did he do? He ripped off his shirt, stepped on a scale. I hope all y'all are really hungry, because the extra crispy croissando is coming. But first, for context, here are some listed weights for other top running backs in the NFL. Todd Gurley, 231. Saquon Barkley, 234. Derrick Henry, 238. Anybody listening right now want to call any of those guys fat? No? Nobody? Yeah, didn't think so. So, what did Zeke weigh in at yesterday? Wait for it. Another minute and 230. Boom. Boom. Have some, trolls. Everybody asking me for the fat alarm yesterday can go ahead and start working on an apology alarm for me. Apology accepted, bums. I'm serious. I'll take those submissions right now at Rome, R-O-M-E, R-O-M-E, at haveitake.com. Normally, I hate to say I told you so, but not this time. This time, I love it. I freaking told you so. Because I was the only one defending this guy. Nothing like some clear-cut video evidence to validate what I was saying and to make you all feel foolish. I tried to tell you this guy was not fat. But you didn't believe me. Case closed. Apology accepted. Scoreboard. Look down at it. Digital scale. Look down at it. When it comes to Zeke, remember, he has two faces. Not two chins. One face on his face. The other face tattooed on his leg. Two faces, not two chins. Let's move on. The other story that I've got updated today is the Easter Bunny beatdown. Yesterday, I brought you the story about the dude in a full Easter Bunny outfit who landed 13 unanswered power punches on a scumbag who had spit on a woman. An epic tale of Orlando heroism, all caught on camera Sunday, and it quickly went viral thereafter. And I did talk about it, and I did give this guy a lot of positive run. However, since it's 2019 and Google keeps score of absolutely everything, it did not take very long for the Tampa Bay Times to unearth a criminal rap sheet a mile long for the man under the bunny mask. And it turns out this dude, in disguise, is no saint. Far from it. In fact, not only is he not a saint, he's actually a person of interest in a recent carjacking and two armed robberies in the Tampa area. And that's not all. Antoine McDonald was also arrested in Delaware for two separate armed robberies. He even has a criminal past in the state of New Jersey, where he may have pistol-whipped somebody. So not exactly a huge surprise that a guy in the bunny suit who threw paws first and asked questions later has a rap sheet and a track record of violence. And seeing how he let his hands go, it was pretty clear that was not the first time he's done that. That was not the first fight that guy's been in. That was not the first beatdown that guy's laid on somebody, clearly. No, what's surprising is how, here's the surprising part, is how he wanted a criminal, a wanted criminal, wanted and relished the public spotlight so much after he went legend. My man was granting interviews to a local news station and TMZ, showing his face and giving his name while the Tampa Bay Times went to work on his background. He even created an Instagram account this week called Bad Bunny Off 19, where he posted videos of getting liquored up in costume and grinding up on a bunch of different women before he beat the hell out of that dude on the street. And now his muggers are everywhere, and the feel-good story of 2019 is over 72 hours after it was written. This guy's like a wanted criminal, and he's ripping off the bunny head and doing interviews and posting on Instagram. A classic superhero tale, if there ever was one. I mean, like Tony Stark made his money as an arms dealer, profiting off of war before he saved the world as Iron Man. Wade Wilson was a criminal assassin before turning into a good guy as Deadpool. Hell, Bruce Wayne was an imprisoned burglar before he bailed Gotham out time after time as Batman. So I guess the moral dilemma is, as old as time, can you separate the man from the mask? Can the bunny be a hero who helped a woman in distress while Antoine McDonald is a known, violent, repeat criminal? That is for you to decide. I guess that's up to your moral compass. On one hand, a bad guy got punched 13 times in the head and a fight was broken up by an Easter bunny. Great story. On the other hand, there's allegedly a really, really bad dude underneath that costume. I guess to me, and I don't want to hedge, the bunny is a hero. Antoine McDonald, the farthest thing from that. And Antoine McDonald played himself breaking character after the fact because he got intoxicated by the spotlight and let everybody know. So in the end, a guy who spit on a woman got exactly what he deserved, punched out by an Easter bunny, and a criminal was exposed for exactly who he is. Kind of worked out for everybody, if you ask me. That scumbag who spit on the woman got the beatdown that he deserved, and now Antoine's going to get what he deserves. ATP brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. That's a good show now. Want to thank everybody involved. Jordan Palmer way back in hour number one. Chris Mannix in hour two. Josh Bell, Pirates first baseman, also with a really good conversation. Listen to episode 78 of the Jim Rome Podcast with Eddie Olczyk. It is live right now. Have an amazing day. Thank you for listening. We're a day away from the NFL draft. More on that tomorrow. See you then. We're out.